I was born into that religion. We'll call it a religion, even though it's, if you look up the definition, it's definitely a cult. I was kind of like passive aggressive when it came to my religion until I had my daughter. So for me, it wasn't worth making any sort of move, you know, just for me. Like, I didn't feel like I was worth it, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. But when I realized that my kid was going to grow up in it, that's when I grew a backbone, I think, and really made steps to get out. And that was after I went to rehab. I went to rehab, started finding out that this is not so normal. Supposedly this was supposed to be your family. Like, every baptized person is supposed to be your family. And I barely heard from anybody.
This is Transformations Recovery Podcast, Season 2, Episode 11. On today's episode, Roman and Cecily talk with Kat, former religious cult member, sober alcoholic, and mom navigating shared custody of her child. Due to the graphic nature of this podcast, listener discretion is advised.
My name is Kat, and I'm an alcoholic.
One of the reasons, when I saw you take a cake, mm-hmm, and you said cult, my ears
perked up
because, yeah, a lot of my friends have had problems with figuring out what their higher power is. Mm-hmm. And it's usually based on they were in some sort of religion that did not work for them or was completely bizarre or whatever. And so you're here, you're obviously staying sober, right? Mm-hmm. Watched you take a cake, and you come from a background where there's some kind of religious connotation that wasn't working for you, and how you got through that, I'm interested in, along with the rest of your story.
Right.
But, you know, the coming from Canada is always interesting, since, yeah, we're all boring, you know, United States of America people.
Well, Canadians are pretty boring. I was born into that religion. We'll call it a religion instead of a cult, even though it's, if you look up the definition, it's definitely a cult. Mm-hmm. And actually, the more and more that I get away from it, the more I realize how much it's a cult, you know? There's some fundamental, like, differences between a regular Christian religion and this one. The big thing was this: there's no devil. And so, you know, part of the shame and guilt that you carry is that everything that you do wrong or everything that goes wrong is directly a result of yourself. Mm. You know, you have good and evil inside your body, and that's, you know, you're not fighting hard enough, you know, against the evil that's within you to be a good person, basically. Wow. You know, and to fight against that. So I say that I was born feeling guilty. Like, I was really, you know, like, I felt like I was wrong. Like, there was just this cloud over my head all the time of I wasn't good enough. And it didn't help that I had a mom that was emotionally unavailable to me. Mm-hmm. You know, she was not a nurturer in this, I have a kid now, and I realize, you know, well, when I was pregnant with her, I went to therapy because I was petrified I wasn't going to be a good mom, mm-hmm, because of my experiences growing up, you know. We were very insular, and basically, you know, your friends, your family, everything was part of that religion, you know. So even though I went to public school, I wasn't allowed to get too involved with anything, you know, in public school, because it was, you know, it might get in the way of anything that had to do with church. So every aspect of my life was colored by my religion that I was born into. And my dad was a convert. He had, his parents weren't in the religion, and so even that was kind of controlled, how much time or, you know, how much we saw them. And once my grandma passed away when I was 12, my grandpa, you know, he was an alcoholic, you know, that's where I where I get some of my stuff from. But my dad had no respect for him, I think, because religion-wise, as well as, the fact that he was an alcoholic. And mm-hmm. so they would talk around the dinner table. My dad was famous for saying, this doesn't go beyond the four walls of this house, or, you know, this is between you and me and the gatepost. But, which is really old-fashioned.
Yeah.
I say it all the time.
Really? Do you?
Yeah. He's pretty old, so.
Well, we're the same age, so.
He's super young. I was just kidding.
But anyway, so they would talk about people in our religion. They were all into everybody's business because it was a it's called a lay ministry, where there's no one head person. It's a group of like seven people. That one is kind of more the head than the rest of them. Mm-hmm. He's called a recording brother. You know, I don't know, everybody's brother and sister. Which is another thing, when people say, hey, brother, or hey, sister, in AA, my hackles go up, like immediately, you know, because I'm like, I'm not part of anything that's like that, you know, so, anyway, so they, if you were part of that board of brethren, they found out some nasty stuff about, you know, people. You know, people are human, but you weren't allowed to be human, mm-hmm. you know, in this religion. And they would talk about it around the dinner table, you know? And I remember thinking, well, you know, I would never reveal anything about myself to anybody because I was so afraid that it would get to someone else. My lack of trust of anybody started at a really young age, you know?
Yeah.
And, probably won't talk about it a lot, but, you know, when I was six, I started being molested by an older kid that was in the religion, and it was a girl, and I found out things about her parents that, you know, there was a good reason why she was screwed up, because mm-hmm. her parents were really screwed up, and they witnessed a lot of it, and so I was... I felt like I was wrong, right? Because I did something wrong, and back to that whole there's no devil thing, you know, I was the one that was at fault, you know, which is common, I guess, for kids anyway, but I was between 6 and 10 and until I felt strong enough to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there, you know, that kind of screws with you,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so I always felt like it was my fault no matter what. And go forward, like, I was 43 when I finally decided, I think I'm going to sit my parents down and tell them about it, you know, slowly starting into, you know, my AA, you know, and stuff. And my dad sat back and crossed his arms and just said, what do you want me to do about it now? You know, that was a long time ago. And my mother said nothing. She said absolutely nothing, and we haven't spoken about it since.
Wow.
You know, so it's interesting, you know, like how you can just be so detached from that kind of stuff and not know how to deal with it.
Hey, this is Sammy Town. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe, review, share, like, and comment.
And so... I go to therapy. I say it takes a village.
Mm-hmm.
I go to therapy. I go to AA. And I also am part of a couple recovery websites and stuff like that that aren't AA sanctioned or whatever. Mm-hmm. That there's a woman's one that is women in all recovery. And it could be recovery from substances, but it could also be recovery from... what a lot of people have gone through in their life, you know, like,
yeah.
Divorce or death or, you know, molestation or, just a really, really bad marriage, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like they use the model of AA in a little bit, you know, but it's really recovery from anything that you find, stops you from being able to deal with your life. on life's terms, right?
So can I ask a question about the no devil thing? So if there was no devil, did that make, if it was good or bad and it happened to you, either way, that was just your fault? Was that the idea?
Or the parents' fault, or the, you know, like it was like there had to have been something wrong with that individual, you know, and whether it was to done, like they would say that God allowed things to happen to you to teach you a lesson.
What?
Or to, so that you could learn from it, or that someone else could learn from it, or whatever.
And since your parents were sitting around the table talking about everybody's business all the time, you just kept those secrets that all those years, because you figured you'd be talked about around somebody's table.
Exactly.
That's horrible.
Yeah. And then, you know, it was one of those where, you know, like here's a Sunday, for instance. We would go to Sunday school that started at 9:30. Then there was church service that started at 11. Then there was always someone coming back to our house that was part of the religion, you know. Like, mm-hmm. And so the conversation was always like kind of veered towards the religion and stuff like that. And gossip, you know, talking about this person or that person, you know.
Of course.
And then there was Sunday lecture that started at 6 p.m. So we were back at church again. That was just a Sunday. We had study days on Saturdays that would take the whole entire day, and they were usually like, I was born in 1970, so there was a lot of weird kooky stuff happening, you know, but I thought that I wasn't going to see the age of 10, because they kept picking dates when Christ was going to return and Armageddon was going to happen and stuff, so I had a lot of fear, like a lot of fear. They would have study days on, you know, trying to interpret the revelations and the Bible and all the like the prophets and all that stuff, you know, because that's the other thing, is that the everything in the Bible is written by God through humans, you know, so we were to believe every single thing and interpret it like a certain way. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, they call it the truth. They say we're in the truth and everybody else is of the world. So it didn't matter what other religion you were, that you didn't have it right. You know, there was just no possibility. It was the truth.
They excluded all others.
Yes.
So was the religion, it was like a form of Christianity?
Yeah, it's I'm trying not to name it, you know, just because, you know, out of respect for people in it, but
okay.
You know, but the name means Brethren in Christ is the you know, the actual name.
Okay.
But they changed everything to it's just so funny, they changed everything into the Hebrew and Greek, you know, from the Bible, you know, like there's just different things, like we didn't go to church. I say church, but that I'm wrong to say church, because that makes me too much like other churches.
Oh my gosh.
And so we go to the ecclesia, which means church.
Just anything to separate from the rest of the world.
Anything to be different. Separate,
you know, so you don't go to a place that has stained glass and crosses, because that's too mainstream religion. You know?
The cross is what got me,
like, really,
because it was a post that he was crucified to, not a cross, right?
Yeah, that's what.
So they say it's a
if you
stick.
if you go into the religion, you know, part of it, and they do all these Bible studies and everything. Well, back in the day, it was a post, and his arms would have been up like this.
So he wasn't. They say he wasn't.
They say
on
he
the
wasn't
cross.
On a cross.
It was
like
just
the,
one
the way it's
which,
drawn.
Historically, you know? If you go back. Crucifixion was always on a post. Like when they used to do it to people, it was on a post. It wasn't on a cross.
Really?
Like that's whatever. The funniest thing is when I first met her parents, I was still trying to be respectful.
Yeah.
And here I am. Hello, sir.
Well, there so what did you just show us? What was that?
It's a cross. It's
a Gaelic
Celtic.
Cross.
It's a Celtic cross. Yeah, it's a tattoo. Okay.
And then this one here And
another cross, yeah.
So he got upset with me because I didn't tell him that about the whole cross issue.
So you should have worn long sleeves, is what you're saying. Here
I was.
And I said, I'm not going to have someone that I, in my life now, because I feel differently.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put that discomfort on that person just because my parents are who they are.
So did her parents say anything to you?
No.
No.
I'm sure they talked about it.
Around the dinner table, yeah. You better believe it.
He had crosses on his arms.
Well, also, just my whole, you know, because, you know, fast forward to where I am now or where I was when I first started my journey. I was so, you know, just worn out from this religion because I got baptized into this religion when I was, I want to say 17, almost turning 18.
Wow.
And this was my conviction. I'm going to do it anyway at some time, so I might as well do it now.
No.
Yeah. You know, that was my whole, you know, and you get interviewed for baptism where you have to go through all of their beliefs and then see, you know, whether, and you can pass, it's a pass or fail.
Seriously.
It really is. And so I went through the interview. I knew all the answers, you know, because I've been brought around church so much, you know. And then I got baptized. Women cover their hair or their heads during church service and
wow.
to you know, cover your glory, basically, which is your hair or whatever. There's Bible verses I could tell you. I was all about making a statement.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, okay, so I'm not going to wear one of these doily, like, long scarfy things. You know, I'm going to wear a rockin' hat, right?
Yeah.
But I'm going to not put it on until after I'm baptized. So the whole first half of the service before I went and got baptized, I did not wear anything on my head. And I actually had someone come over and tap my shoulder and say, did you forget to bring a head covering? And I said, no, I got it, you know. And and so after in its full immersion, you know, baptism,
yeah.
And everything. So after I came back upstairs, they sing hymns the whole time that you're getting ready after you're, you know, after you've been dunked, you know,
okay.
Basically. And so I wore this fuzzy, I thought it looked a little bit like, you know, Russian, you know, it was like all furry kind of thing with a giant salamander, you know, pinned on the front, you
yes.
know, and that was my hat that I wore.
So know? That was like your statement of rebellion.
Sort of, you know, I did rebellion in like all these like quiet little ways because like I knew it was spare the rod, spoil the child in our house as well.
Yeah.
So I knew what would happen if I rebelled too much. I mean, I won't say that my parents beat me, you know, but you know, when you go and you're sent to the drawer to go and get the belt to hit you, you know, it's like there we had a designated one that was in the drawer, and if I did something wrong that warranted the belt, I had to go and get it and hand it to him, which is just like messes with your head just that, you
yeah.
know. And
yeah.
they had a system of, well, you either put your hand out and go, and if you pulled it back any, you would be hit twice. Like you would get hit, you know, for the first offense, and then your second offense was actually
pulling your hand.
Doing what's natural and
yeah.
pulling your hand back, and you would get another hit with the belt on your hand. So that was the lesser offense kind of, you know, hitting. And then the other one was you had to pull your pants down and, you know, face the wall, and you got the belt on your rear end. And I used to think, please let it be the worst offense, because I hated this the pulling of your hand thing.
Yeah.
You know, so much, you know, but it was like, that's all like psychological that I've found out now, you
yes,
know,
yes.
And stuff. But, and then my brother, you know, my brother was more rebellious, you know, like he, you know, drugs and alcohol and all that stuff. And my dad would come home from work with a, with one of those, like his steel-toed shoes, and my brother would say something, you know, off the cuff or whatever, and it would be, he would kick him while he was laying on the floor or whatever, you know, or he punched the door next to his head, and it was his bragging point. Oh, well, it was either him or the door, so I chose the door, you know, and he felt like pretty proud of his choice. And stuff. And there was a calendar that hung in front of that hole for the rest of, you know, for the rest of time. You know? It's like, 'cause it was one of those plywood kind of doors, you know, that is hollow on the inside. And yeah, he just, wow. My brother smoked when he started smoking when he was 12. And just different stuff. And he was 14 months older than me. And so he was my barometer. He was like, okay, well, as long as I'm not as bad as my brother, then I'll be okay.
Transformations Recovery Podcast is committed to helping those who are still suffering. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, share, and review. It will really help us out. Thanks.
My mom had the hand that shot out, you know, when you didn't even expect it, you know, and you get slapped right across the face or whatever. And so I learned to say stuff while I was backing up. So she would miss, you know, which would then make her really angry and you got sent to your room.
Was that how it was for most households in your religion, or was that your household? Was that like your parents' decision?
I don't think that was like them being told that this is how you have to do it, but I think that that's what it was like for a lot of kids in my religion, you know.
Okay,
and
okay.
It was, you know, and then we were considered kind of worldly, you know, compared to I had a friend that they had to sew all their own clothes and they weren't allowed to even wear pants to school, so they had to stand out. Well, and again, in the 70s, right? It was long hair, kind of hippie sort of stuff. I had short hair because my hair was, according to my mother, it was a pain. And it grew forward and it would always be in your eyes if we let you grow it. So it's just, so I actually had a haircut just like my, you know, like I look like a boy, you know? And, so I had short hair a lot of my life, you know, and now I've gone back to it, of course, but it's a little bit different than what it used to be. But, so my brothers, they weren't allowed to look like the time, so they had their heads, you know, shaved, you know. And I remember at school pretending, well, my last name used to be Smith. So it was pretty easy to just say, no, that's not my brother. You know, he's got the same last name, but, you know, it's not my brother, you know. So I pretend I didn't even know my own siblings. I had two older brothers because they had their heads shaved and they would make fun of them, like the kids at school and stuff.
Because everybody else is rolling long hair.
Everybody's rolling with the long, bushy hair, you know, and stuff. And then my brothers have it buzzed off, you know, and stuff. So,
which is funny because Roman chose to have his hair buzzed off at that time.
I think that might be a different issue.
Yeah. And now that I'm bald, I would like to have my hair. Anyways, this interview is not about me.
Youth is wasted on the young.
Amen. So you were saying about your brother rebelling with the smoking and the drugs and stuff. When did you start doing drugs and drinking?
I actually have never done drugs.
Ever?
Ever.
You are a dye-in-the-wool alcoholic.
I am.
The last of the windows.
Straight up alcoholic. And it was funny when I went to rehab because they went, nothing at all. You know, like, and they said, you are unusual, we will say, you know. And I said, what do you mean? And they were like, we don't often see just an alcoholic. And I went, what do you mean just an alcoholic? You know, of course, because I'm special, you know. And I really thought that, like, I didn't know the big book, right? And I didn't know that there's such a thing as what a garden variety drunk, right? Mm-hmm. So when my counselor at rehab called me a garden variety drunk, I was so insulted because like I was like, what, you know? And I didn't know he was quoting the big book, right? You know, and stuff, and so it was like a 12 step sort of rehab, but you went through your first three steps. But but see, I was wrong for seeking outside counsel for my problem as well, you know.
Were you still living with your parents?
No, I married into the religion.
Oh, okay.
You know, and another biggie is women are lower than the man.
Oh, some missing.
Really, when it push comes to shove, you're supposed to defer to your spouse, you know, if you're a woman. And in the religion, the women don't pray, they don't read, they don't, you know, like it's all patriarchal, you know. So
if your man's not telling you this, it's not worth hearing, basically.
Yeah, I mean, our relationship wasn't quite so black and white when it came to that kind of stuff, but it was definitely he would approach me on things that some of the brethren didn't like about what I was doing or not doing, you know, and he would speak to me. You know, my husband would speak to me most of the time, especially the further along. Things changed a lot, you know. Like, I kind of had the attitude of, I don't agree with everything, but whatever, you know, and that kind of stuff. I was kind of, like, passive-aggressive when it came to my religion until I had my daughter. And then I started realizing this is not something I want to teach my daughter. Mm-mm. You know, it's like, I'm only having one kid, and this is the kid, you know, and she's not going to learn to just lay down like a, you know, a doormat, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And she's smart. She's like a smart little observant, you know, kid. And at 3 years old, she was saying, Mama, why is it always a man up there? Why is it always a man that does this or a man does that? And I, you know, like at three, she's observing this, and
yeah,
and it's making me uncomfortable because I didn't agree with it, but I felt like this was what I was born into. All my friends are this religion. All, like, I married into a family where, you know, his side was all the religion, and my side, you know, my brothers were both baptized into it and married into it, and, you know, like, and it's just, it becomes your whole entire world. So for me, it wasn't worth making any sort of move, you know, just for me. Like, I didn't feel like I was worth it, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. But when I realized that my kid was going to grow up in it, that's when I grew a backbone, I think, and really made steps to get out. And that was after I went to rehab and started getting a little bit more of the outer aspects of, whoa, that's not normal, mm-hmm, you know? Like, because, like, I seriously didn't think that much about, yeah, it's not normal, because I grew up in it, mm-hmm, you know, it's all I knew. And so, like, we weren't even allowed to go to other churches to check out some other religion, you know.
What happened if you did?
Well, my dad was like, well, while you're under my roof,
yeah,
you follow my rules, and, you know, life could get bad for you if you tried, mm-hmm, you know. And so I just, like, fell into line and just said, okay, mm-hmm, you know. And I think that had I rebelled in the same manner that my brother did, or worse, you know, I just think my life would have been hell, you know. So instead, I got married when I was 18. I got married when I was 18, moved out of the house into the house that I was in with him, and just continued on, mm-hmm, you know, just toeing the line. I went to rehab, started finding out that this is not so normal. And also, I was kind of being shunned because I admitted that I had a drinking problem, and that's obviously my fault. And, you know, back to the devil thing, they call it sins of the flesh, and that's a direct quote from the Bible. Yeah, but, you know, so I didn't hear much from anybody when supposedly this was supposed to be your family. Like, every baptized person is supposed to be your family, you know, in that church. And I barely heard from anybody. Wow. And I ended up going to rehab twice in the same year, which was 2014. I went in February 2014, and then I went in October, November 2014.
What happened in between the two rehab stints?
Well, I stayed 30 days, and while I was in rehab, I was served with papers from my ex saying that he was going to legally separate from me.
Wow.
And he did an emergency order to take custody away from me for Lily as well. Yeah, that was my support in rehab, was being handed these legal papers. And so I spent a lot of time on the payphone trying to get a lawyer.
Yeah.
But that's even against the religion, which is kind of crazy. You know, like, you're not supposed to take anything to court, you know, suing or any other kind of thing is. So it's kind of funny. Not funny, but my ex managed to make everybody think that he was the one that was the victim somehow. So when I got out of rehab, I had no place to go. Like, I couldn't move home because he had a restraining order against me as well.
What?
Like, I wasn't allowed to be within 100 feet of my own house. And I moved into sober living.
Yeah.
And I was there for 2 months, and then he asked me to come back. And I thought, wow, you know, he sees all the change in me and stuff. And really what it was he was getting to the busy time of his year, and he needed me around.
Child care.
Take care of the kid. And I stayed sober for quite a while, and then I started drinking again. And so and what it says in the big book, you know, that whole, what is it, chapter 3, where, you know, you try to drink hard liquors or
beer only, switching from wine to brandy,
right? All that stuff. So I was not a chick drink drunk. I was definitely the whiskey was my thing. It was just whiskey, and of course it had
Canadian,
to be.
She's Canadian.
It had to be Crown Royal. It had to be Crown Royal, and anyway,
so fancy.
So fancy.
We just say royal here in the United States. Royal. Sounds so much
don't
better.
Get started on the different words, the pronunciations.
Yes.
So you're drinking Crown Royale.
Crown Royale and Grey Goose vodka.
Yes.
You know? And so I was definitely top shelf at first, you know.
At first.
At first. And so I was just shy of 44 when I went to Alcoholics Anonymous.
Okay.
Or not, yeah, just shy of 44. And I went to AA first, you know, because I knew I had a problem, but it was just a problem. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't an alcoholic. I just had a problem. Mm-hmm. I couldn't seem to cut back, mm-hmm. you know. And but I was still drinking high end, you know, and stuff. And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, at the time I blamed AA for this certain place that I went to, I wasn't greeted as a newcomer, you know, like I, which I have kind of kept that with me because like I identified.
Really?
And got a chip and no one spoke to me afterwards. You know, it was interesting. It was like kind of, well, one person shoved a thing at me and said, here's my phone number. And I was thinking, why would a stranger give me their phone number? And I threw it out right away because like that person didn't actually like say anything else to me. Just said, call me, you know, or whatever. Yeah. And I thought that was kind of creepy.
Was this so, in Canada?
No, this was here.
So when you married into the religion, you were...
I moved here.
You moved here.
So, okay, with your ex-husband.
Yeah, and then going to AA, the second time I went to that same AA meeting, which that's another huge thing for anybody who's new, try out more than one meeting.
Absolutely.
In a different location.
Yeah.
You know, because they're not all great meetings. And so this meeting that I went to the second time, it was all about a guy trying to get my number. Anyway, so I wasn't going to have anything to do with AA. And then I went back to drinking. And so in February of 2014, it's really easy to keep my age right because, you know, I was born in 70. So,
yeah.
So I was almost 44 and I went to rehab after, blacking out when and kept on drinking. And so I had a 0.46.
Holy shit.
Yes.
That's what I always tell her. She doesn't feel maybe like she qualifies. I'm like, you qualify.
People, 0.46.
Normal people don't do this.
Yeah.
Three people would have been dead already.
I know, right? And I woke up in the hospital and I was seriously confused. I was just watching reruns of Chopped and just drinking with my vodka under my pillow. You know, and because like at the time, this is how broken our marriage was. My ex did not know I was drinking. He thought I was still quit.
Wow. You know.
And so I was pulling it out from underneath my pillow and drinking. And that was the first time that I had kept it under my pillow. You know, I had always hid it all over the house.
Yeah.
My barometer was like if I can walk and get to a glass, which was funny, you know, like I was still pouring it in it was a juice glass. So if I couldn't make it to the glass, then I was done drinking, you know, that was it. And so this was the first time that I had it under my pillow and I managed to drink almost a whole bottle, I guess.
Yeah.
There was like that much left at the bottom. I started drinking again because I had no support at home. Yeah. And so I used it as an excuse to go back to the bottle because I just couldn't handle life the way it was. And so I started drinking and again, he was oblivious. You know, he had no idea that I was drinking again. Wow. I hit it, you know, and I don't know how, like, and part of it is he really didn't see me. Our relationship was so broken that he didn't want to be in the same room with me. You know, he didn't want to be around me at all, you know. And so I was probably 3 weeks into drinking again. And I went to wine, you know, because it's not as bad as hard alcohol.
So classy.
But when you drink 4 bottles a day, you know, you're an alcoholic, you know. And I set all these alarms and stuff so that I could function as an adult, you know, like getting my kid, you know, out of bed, ready for school. I only had one shot, you know, just so I could stop shaking, you know, mm-hmm. and stuff. And mm-hmm. And then on the way home from dropping her off at school, I would go to the 7-Eleven and buy 2 bottles of wine at like 8 o'clock in the morning. Wow. And
top shelf.
Yeah, top shelf.
Yeah, I was no longer top shelf.
Whiskey
drinker.
Up here to
Charles wine down.
And so the wine was something, but then I started adding vodka with the wine, you know, and stuff. Like, and by then I was the bottom shelf purchaser. I had this thing where Popoff was really disgusting. So I went to the bottom shelf because there was no way I was going to drink Popoff.
Really?
So yeah. Kamchatka was, that was up there.
Kamchatka was
the
best.
Did you know? Did you know that CVS and Rite Aid have their own brands of bottom shelf vodka? Prestige. You know, stuff?
I think that's really? Ralph's is prestige.
I did. I did. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, he did.
Yeah.
See, I'm old.
I just and stole my booze, so I could steal from any shelf.
Yeah. I didn't. I there were some things I didn't do, which like that's, you know, it's amazing to me, you know, how encapsulated I was in my own house, you know, like I just, I didn't drink with other people because they didn't drink like me. I didn't, you know, I just wanted to disappear,
yeah,
you know, and not feel anything. So, anyway, so like I hid those little bottom shelf vodkas in every room of the house so that I could take a swig, whichever room I was in, mm-hmm. you know? And so it was getting out of control again. So I finally admitted that I was, you know, having problems again to my ex and to my husband at the time. And I said, I think I need to go back to rehab. Now, the first rehab, I didn't, to be honest, like, you know, I didn't think I belonged there. But yeah. at the same time, I don't think that I got the benefits of the rehab because I was there for 30 days because I was dealing with trying to find a lawyer and trying to deal with this person who's not supporting me.
Yeah.
And so it got muddied up with all of that kind of stuff. So when I started drinking again, it was kind of like the you would drink if you had my life too.
Yeah.
You know, like I felt justified in drinking again because it was the only way I could deal with my life. Because I don't think learn enough in those 30 days about other stuff in my life because it was all focused on my husband and me, you mm-hmm. know, in our yeah. relationship. And, you know, so he managed to make my rehab about him and he wasn't even there.
You know? Right. Dick. Just,
yeah.
We love making this podcast and want to keep doing it. Please consider becoming a patron of our podcast on Patreon. Simply go to patreon.com and search Transformations Care Podcast or click the link on our website at transformationscare.com. Pledge any amount and receive our undying love. If you pledge $10, we'll give you the raw, unedited version of each week's interview plus other cool swag. Pledge $25 and receive a Transformations Care bag, invitations to special events, bonus content, and other surprises. Most importantly, at 2,000 patrons, we will scholarship an addict or alcoholic through the Transformations Care Residential Detox Program.
Anyway, so it's just, it's, I don't know where I was going with that, but, you know, going back the second time, it was my decision mm-hmm. to go back. And so I got more out of it. But then I got put on a IOP halfway through because of my insurance and started driving home every day. And I could have sworn I was going into 7-Eleven for a pack of cigarettes and came out with like a bottle of wine, you know?
And this was after like, your second
This is
rehab?
My, no, it's during my second rehab because I was in an IOP and I drove
oh,
home.
Wow.
And so on the way home, I think, you know, it was like I was overwhelmed with, I still have to deal with this angry, angry man that's in my house, you know, and so I drank, you know, and I had no problem fessing up to my rehab that I drank, and I think it was one of the counselors later told me that they thought it was because I had a back in the back of my mind a hope that I would get put back into rehab again and not the IOP so that way I could stay away from him.
Right? Oh, wow.
You know, so so I drank a little bit after I got out of rehab the second time, but my sobriety date is November 22nd of 2015, and so I had to sober up for Thanksgiving. That was my, in my head, Thanksgiving was the key. And I didn't want to have the shakes or anything like that. So November 22nd is actually a date that I sort of chose. I'm not sure whether it was actually the 22nd. It could have been. I just knew that by then I had stopped drinking. It could have been the 20th. I don't know. I was trying to make sure that I didn't have the shakes or be bad at Thanksgiving, because I knew I was going to be under a microscope.
Absolutely.
I was going to the rehab. After your 30 days, they had 6 months of aftercare, you know, like meetings at night and stuff like that. And so I decided that I was going to go to those. So I wasn't going to any AA meetings except for at the rehab, you know, 7 days a week.
Wow.
And going to the counseling sessions, and then doing an AA meeting or a CA meeting or an NA meeting or
anything.
They were definitely like a one-stop shop. You know, and so that was my comfort zone, and I didn't want to be anywhere else besides there. You could tell that my husband felt like he was losing control of me, you know? So the things that he said to me were like even like worse than the rest of our marriage, like where they had gotten. He never hit me, but he was definitely like an emotional abuser. And to this day, he would never admit that. You know, like he said, I wasn't an abusive husband. I never laid a hand on you, you know. But he, when he finally, when he said, I just can't even stand being in the same room with you, you disgust me, I realized maybe I don't deserve that. And that was like a little bit of my you know, self-esteem starting to come back. And this is after two rehabs and all that therapy and stuff. And that's when, and I stopped, when I went to the rehab the second time, I stopped going to church. So I was 44 and starting to try and do my D program then.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 50 now, you know, so it's a lot of deprogramming in my head of what is and what isn't, you know. So so I responded to his second, he had already filed a he tried to do a restraining order and take away Lily again.
Ugh.
He managed to for a month. He took her away again for a month. And actually a little bit longer than that, he took it to the courts. So I had to prove to them that A, I was already sober when he took her away this time, and B, you know, like I'm not doing anything wrong. But it took a while for the courts to realize that,
yeah.
You know, because he's a really good liar.
Yeah. So where were you living in a sober living?
So the second time I went home after it, and supposedly we were going to give this marriage a go once again, you know, so we were going to therapy, and then I told the therapist, I don't even know why we're coming here, because like it, at least like we would go home, we'd be fighting, we wouldn't talk to each other, the whole thing, and you would finally get to the like slightly comfortable enough to acknowledge each other's presence, you know, in the same house, and then we'd go to therapy again, you know.
It was
this cycle of a horrible, you know, like just being there. And now I'm sober, and there's no way of getting around it. Well, I told the therapist that I couldn't handle this anymore, and I just didn't see the point of coming to therapy. And so he went straight from that session to his lawyer and filed another legal separation. And I remember him calling me and saying, "This is the way it's going to be. I'm filing for legal separation. I am taking Lily. You're going to have to get your own place. And you have a lot of changing to do before I will even consider taking you back." That was on a phone call while I was wandering around Ross. And I said, "Oh, okay." You know, and I just called my lawyer that I had gotten from the first time. And she's a pistol.
She was so freaking awesome.
Yeah,
like,
and
I love that woman.
And she said, "Oh, I'd like to see how that's gonna be." I'd never lived on my own.
Wow.
I was just shy of 45. So I'd never lived on my own, never been with anyone besides my parents or my husband, like, and never slept with anyone else. Like, never, you know, like, I was just
so sheltered.
All my friends were in the church. I responded in a couple days after his filing of legal separation. I responded with a divorce. And so I became excommunicated, you know, like ostracized and everything. I didn't have any people I knew outside of the church here, you know? So I moved. That's why I was overwhelmed. When I was sober, what was that, like maybe 6 months? Because it was November through May is when I moved into this condo that I'm in. And I moved in with everything that was in our house, you know, into a condo. You
know,
everything. And I wasn't allowed to get rid of anything. Why? He walked out and filed for a legal separation. So I was in the house. And so then it became, we weren't able to divide anything or get rid of anything until it was settled.
So he found a new place. He left and found a new place.
And he took Lily.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so I was alone and trying to deal with all of this stuff. And it took 2 days with moving trucks to move all my stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm a bit of a, you know, not a pack rat, I like to save things. Things always have some sort of use, you know, okay. And stuff. And don't get me wrong, I throw out, you know, baggies of, you know, from Ziplocs and all that kind of stuff. I'm not that weird. You know? But I know someone who washes
those stacks of newspapers.
I know someone who washes those things out and reuses them.
Ziploc bags?
Yes. Yes. So so there are people that are worse
than
me.
And it's not for crack or anything. It's like those, maybe.
Yeah, that makes
sense. I lose this.
There's a lot about AA that reminds me of church.
Yeah.
And so I've had to struggle through, you know, what I'm okay with and what I'm not.
Yeah.
And like when people say the Lord's Prayer at AA, I don't say it.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be that I would get all riled up, you know, inside me. Now it's just like, well, I just don't say it. It's too churchy. It's straight from the Bible, you know, and stuff. But I didn't want to be noticed. Like, I wanted to just show up at AA and don't look at me. My gosh, you know, like, don't even glance in my direction. Don't even hug me, you know. Yeah, like, if someone tried to hug me, I'd shoot my hand out, you know, and go, my name's Kat. You know, like, I was trying to make sure.
Bright pink hair, trying not to get noticed.
Yeah, like
that. Why are you talking to me?
Well, and the tattoos are all since my sobriety.
Oh, really?
Yes, because that's also that's a sin. One of the things that my ex actually put in his paperwork was that I was acting unbecoming of a woman my age.
No.
Yeah. And
unbecoming this.
Yes, because I got tattoos. I got pierced my cheeks and pierced right here, like the, what do you call that?
Base of your neck.
Your clavicle or whatever. Yeah. And so that was acting unbecoming. And he thought that was a valid thing to bring me to court over, you know?
How'd that work out in court?
Yeah.
It did not work out well for him.
Right.
You know, in fact,
you sound like an idiot.
Every time he went to court, he got his ass handed to him more and more. Right?
Yeah.
And every time he got his ass handed to him, the more my self-esteem started to go up.
Absolutely.
You know, because it was almost like a validation of the fact that I did not grow up in a normal household.
Absolutely.
And that the way I was taught was not normal, you know, and wouldn't hold up in court if you know. So, and then he became so disillusioned with his lawyer. It obviously was his lawyer's fault that he came to court the last and final time representing himself.
Always a good decision.
That was when I told my lawyer, I said, remember when I said, don't pull out your guns because it's only going to aggravate him and it's going to make my life worse?
Yeah.
And I said, I'm telling you right now, pull out your guns.
Get the AK-47. It's on.
Do whatever you can to him. Just don't piss off the judge.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, and I know you know how to do that. And so I just wanted to make sure that the judge was still on my side, but I wanted his ass handed to him. I really, really did, you know.
Does he recognize at all that he lives in kind of like an altered state of reality? Or is that
No.
Well, he was indoctrinated just like you were.
He was.
He's still believing.
Yes.
You're not.
Yeah,
but there's no.
I
questions.
Tried to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, he thought I was the crazy ex talking about.
No. Okay, so it's the Libra thing. Like, I have to. I would freak myself out if I didn't see both sides, and so there are two sides. In every divorce, sometimes the ex-wife is going to just he did this and that. So I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt until I got to know him. He is a biggest piece of shit. Like, he just. Everything she says is true and then some.
Wow.
Because he's loud. He's tries to be intimidating. Like, he just... Big old... Like, just... He thinks he's the shit.
Yeah.
Like, looking at it psychologically, there is... It's borderline narcissistic, if not an actual... You could take the DSM, like the diagnostic manual.
Yeah.
And word for word, he... qualifies
as a narcissist.
Yeah. And he's also got God on his side.
Right.
Well, don't forget that. I mean, the Bible and the Lord.
Well, and really what they did was they made the Bible a weapon.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Which all religion, I mean, not all, but
all, it's a large book,
all
and it's
religions
hardbound.
Do that. Like,
yeah. Hard. And so, you know, when I got excommunicated and they don't even call it that, they call it disfellowshipped.
Ew, that sounds so much worse.
Yes.
I would rather be excommunicated than
because you've disfellowshipped and so other people can't fellowship with you. Or they don't say it in so many words, but that's the action that was taken.
They have to get
me.
Rid of you because you're going to influence other members.
Absolutely.
Right.
So did any of those people, any of your friends, did you ever speak to them again?
A couple times, and it was obvious that they were...
Wanted nothing to do with you.
Yeah. And so I just...
Was that heartbreaking? Those
yes.
were like your people.
Yes. I was bitter and heartbroken for a good 2.5 years or whatever.
Just alone in so many ways.
Yeah.
In sobriety.
And I was like in a pretty heavy duty depression.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
So it was mostly like how I even got to AA every day. I don't, you know, like I would get up, shower, get some clothes on, and then go to AA, and then I'd go home and immediately, you know, get back in my pajamas and crawl back in bed.
Like, so I just, that's like, not normal. We're not supposed to do that?
No, no. And I managed to function a little bit more once I finally started to gain back some custody with Lily. There's a lot, because it's so intertwined, the steps were really difficult to decide what's harmful to yourself or others,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what amends that you should make. So mm-hmm. My amends to kind of myself is acceptance of where I'm at. And that if I were to try and make amends to my ex or to even that one brother, you know, or whatever, they all talk to each other. They all will just start. So it's harmful to
it'll be used
me,
against you.
Not so much, you know, like anymore. Although, you know, with my ex, he would use it against me in the courts if he could, anything, you know. So, but what it does do is it colors how they deal with Lily in the church. You know, so like.
So Lily still attends.
Every other week, she has no choice.
How does
right?
she feel about that?
She doesn't love it, but she does it,
okay.
you know, and she does it with an eye roll and a, you know, like kind of, she doesn't want to be there. She doesn't want to do it, you know, but
she's starting to see.
Really? Well, she said she said that she's biding her time until she goes away to college, and I said you don't have to go away to make that
a choice
separation. But she's also like, you know, she just turned 13, and she's like still like she's mentally anguishing over the fact that she's gonna lose a lot of friends and family if she denies the church.
Wow.
She's already dealing
at 13.
With
yes, she, that's such a
it
hard
was,
place
wasn't
to
even
be.
A couple months ago that she had
apart.
A breakdown at really? Like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. She couldn't sleep.
Saying that she loves her friends and she doesn't know what's going to happen when she, you know, she's not sure where she falls on, like whether she's gay or not, or bi or not, or, you know, she's not sure where she falls on, but she thinks that she's different.
Yeah.
And I'm supportive of her, but
absolutely.
that's intolerable, you know, like, it's not, if you're gay, or if you're anything other than a straight, white female, you know, which, this is a heavily white religion, there are other ethnicities, but it's very, you know,
rare.
But if you're anything other than that, you're wrong, you know. Uh-huh. And you would be, you know, you're a heathen, you know, if you're a homosexual or anything other than straight, you know. So like my family would
disown her,
or, you know, like if I ever was that way, I would have been, you know, disowned, you know. So
God, that's so sad.
So she's already dealing with the heartache, you know, and I hate it, you know, because, but at least I can give her the other side of the coin now,
mm-hmm.
you know, whereas like when I first left it, I could barely even, you know, do the other side of the coin, you know, like I couldn't think of why, what I was doing was a strong move and it was right. You know, because at the time I just felt like I should, you know, give in and give up and just go back. And, you know, like even with my drinking, I got to the point where I wasn't okay with the religion and bringing up Lily. So I wasn't overtly suicidal, but I would have been okay if I hadn't have woken up. Like I'd gotten to that point where it was like, well, you know, I love myself so little.
Yeah.
You know, and I still can't say that I love myself, you know, and I still have a hard time looking straight in the mirror at myself. You know, I get ready as quick as I can without, you know, I wore mascara today, like anyone's going to know, you know, like my self-esteem was so little that I had to make a New Year's resolution to put mascara on.
Really?
Yeah. That was like my New Year's, because I couldn't look at myself for that long, you know? So
I'm sorry, without any makeup on, she's still beautiful.
Beautiful, absolutely.
Like, I didn't know she never wore makeup. Like,
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Well, makeup is prideful.
So is that not okay in the religion?
Oh, yeah. You're no longer.
No
yeah,
women
fellow.
Wear makeup.
Well, some do,
okay.
But they're...
They're prideful.
Yeah, they're prideful. Yeah. That's their, you know... There's so, sin in the flesh. Right?
How do you reconcile all of that? Like, everybody that's there that's like you, that was born into it and brought up into it, right? Like, I can sit back and judge them all day long, but it's not their fault. That's what they know.
Yeah.
Because I have unlearned so many things that I was taught by my parents, right?
We all have.
Not like you, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So we can't blame all those people for the way they're acting because they were brought up, born into it, or whatever.
Right.
But now that you're not there.
Right.
And how do you reconcile a higher power with taking the 12 steps? Because the higher power is all in there.
It honestly, I almost had to take it out of the equation. Like, I almost had to do it different, you know. And
okay.
It took five sponsors before I could even, you know, get through the steps.
Okay.
Like, and a lot of it was my fault, where, like, I just didn't call, you know,
mm-hmm.
every day. Or I'd rather text than call. And I had, like, an old-fashioned one where they were just like... No, that's not, you know, staying in contact with me. and stuff. So I went with sponsors and then periods of time without sponsors and just kept going to meetings, yeah. you know, because I started noticing that it didn't seem to fail. Every time I went, there was a nugget, you know, there was some sort of nugget that I heard that kind of made it worth it for even making the effort to go to the meeting, you know. So I was starting to become stronger in myself and, you know, and trying to give myself some power. So it was really hard for me to then, you know, give away my power to a higher power, let alone the judgmental, you know, God to be feared. Yeah. Because I lived in fear all my life of you know, being wrong. Like, not, like, in like, just being sinful, mm-hmm. you know? And so, I just felt like I was so flawed, and I just, I couldn't give it away to God, you know? Because I couldn't define God as anything other than the God that I grew up with. Because every time I tried, I felt like I was sinning.
Really?
You know? So it was like one of those, like, I'm never going to be able to move on if I don't get this sorted out. Yeah. So I started by, like, pretending that the angels were having painting classes, you know, and the sky was, like, kind of my, just the sky and the vastness was kind of my higher power. And I gave all this power to the angels instead of to God. Aww. And then I said that the angels, you know, they painted the trees in the fall, you know, and stuff. And, you know, like just the idea of something, you know, going in and painting each leaf.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I was trying to make something bigger than me. Okay. You know, I wasn't really buying it, you know, but I was, that was the way I could, you know, at least separate it from God, the religious God that I, you know, grew up with. And to be honest, you know, that's changed. Now I'm not so sure angels are in charge of anything, you know, and stuff. But, yeah. It's almost like I had to forget everything and let whatever my higher power is, let me
figure it out. Yeah.
Sit in, there is no God. You know, for a long time, you know, because, like, I just felt like and praying, I, you know, like the serenity prayer, I dropped God from the beginning. So everybody else says God, you know, and I say, grant me the serenity. Like, mm-hmm. I don't say God at yeah. the beginning. 'Cause, like, I had to remove God from so many things, you know? And I would get angry when people, like, made it too much like church. You know, like, when they would bring religion into, you know, the program and stuff. And, but I told him, I said, the big book and everything about it is, like, so peppered with Bible. It's, mm-hmm. like, it's, when it was, like, hammered into us. Like, we have Bible marking and all these, like, arguments and all that kind of stuff so that you can refute whatever someone from, you know... You quench the fiery darts of the wicked.
I love that.
So you literally were, like, taught to argue.
Her notes, though, this is where my thing about organized religion is, you could put spin on anything. Like, I learned how to write research articles where you could turn something that was against it, just take little snippets.
Yeah.
So she has markings in her Bible that she grew up with that says, see page 100. Like, it jumps from, like, page to page just to combine.
Use the whole Bible to...
As a weapon.
Yeah.
Disfellowship letter that she got...
Oh my God, you got a letter?
Was citing. Like, it had, like, actual citations. Like... This blah, 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 see this verse.
Well, no, they had at least 3 verses for every,
seriously?
Every point that they had.
Absurd.
Do they hang out in the Old Testament a lot?
No, they did both. Which, I think I know where you're going with that. You know, like, that there's 2 commandments is to love your God, love the Lord God with all your heart, soul, and might, and your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah.
Those are 2 commandments. That's it.
That's, you know? It. Yeah, that's
that
it.
Jesus left us.
Because we could never follow the law, whether he flooded and killed most of us or not. We still wouldn't follow the law. We never followed the law because we're fucking human beings. And then Christ showed up and said, hey, love God, love your neighbor. Everything's cool.
Yeah.
I've read the fucking book.
I love how people still fuck that up.
And as far as you were talking about them interpreting Revelations to figure out when the end time was coming. I've read Revelations a few times. You can't interpret that shit.
It's crazy.
It's fun to read, but there's no interpretation.
Well, all these horns. Then there's the woman of scarlet that rides in. So the higher power thing, I really, really struggled with. And again, you know, like hit your knees when you pray. I don't do that. You know, I understand the meaning of being humble, you know, and stuff. But anything that has to do with like kind of religion or, you know, that kind of thing, I've kind of backed away from, you know, just so that it gives me the ability to relinquish, you know, what I have to something, you know, and because if I kept the religious part of it in me at all, I don't think that I would make it through the steps, you know. So I've made the amends that I have deemed, you know, or that my, you know, sponsor at the time has been able to, you know, say that, yeah, I can see how that could harm you or harm your daughter or whatever. So I made the amends that I could do. And, you know, maybe at some other time, maybe I can, you know, if someone becomes a little bit more reasonable, you know, I might do that. Or I might just, you know, like, I think my biggest amends is to my daughter. You know, and she was six when I started doing this, and she's not old enough for me to like start saying, well, I did this and this and this, you know, or, you know, how can I make it better for you? How I'm doing it is living amends, right? You know, I'm a better mom, I'm a more present mom, you know, even though I was there right next to her the whole time, I was not a present mom, you know, and I'm able to show her that there's more ways to love than just one way. There's more ways to life than just one way, you know, and stuff. And those are things that are gifts of the program. You know, if I hadn't stuck around and figured it out and muddled my way through it, using the support of the program, I wouldn't have had any support except for a therapist, you know? And, you know, so it has helped me. And I view, and I've told my therapist this, she's more of a sponsor to me than any of the sponsors ever have been to me, because I don't allow myself to trust them enough, you know, because of those messages that I got for all of my life. You know, it's like, I remember the first time I shared at a meeting, my whole body ended up quaking. You know, and on the way home, I kept going, why did I open my mouth? Why did I, you know, like I felt naked in front of people, you know, and I was so petrified. Somehow this was going to hurt. What's that?
Is that back to the dinner table?
Back to the, you know, how everybody was treated, you know? Yeah. And so,
have those feelings, do you feel differently now, or does that still affect you?
It affects me sometimes. Mm-hmm. I definitely feel differently. Like, I would have, like, it's one thing to be asked to do something like this, you know, that we're doing today. There's another thing to, it's a whole other thing for me to actually have said yes.
Yeah.
And to follow through with it. You know, it's like, that, you know, like this to me, you know, and I joke, but I really did have a therapy session on Friday just to prepare for this, you know, because this makes me feel...
No joke.
This makes me feel naked, mm-hmm. you know? Because that's the other thing is just, you know, like I've never... My life has never not been about the church and about, you know, what my husband wants and stuff. And so I never had a real career.
Wow, yeah.
I didn't go to, you know, college or university, you know, and so part of the what made me overwhelmed was just at 44 or 45 years old trying to figure out who I am, you know, and where I belong, you know, and I do think that I found my people.
Yeah.
In AA and NA and CA and, you know, whatever else, you know. And I'm just you know, but I still learn more. You know, like I go to the women's meeting that's at your house now.
Yeah.
You know, this COVID thing has made things like interesting. But anyhow, and I think good in a good way for me, because it's more casual and not so uptight and, you know, sticking to the exact way that AA should be run and all that stuff. It makes me feel a little more relaxed, you know. But there's no way I would have ever gone to a women's meeting.
Really?
No.
Why? You know? Was there a difference in your eyes?
Well, women are lesser than men, you know, for one, right?
Oh, wow.
You know?
Yeah.
But I was never really close to a lot of women. And I think that that has a lot to do with my mother, who wasn't there for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so... I just didn't trust women.
Yeah.
And then also I was molested by a girl, you know,
mm-hmm.
for so long. So women were not my cup of tea.
Did you ever confront that was a woman or another child, another kid? What, you said it was an older kid, right?
Yeah, she was about, you know, like, and I was just talking about that with my therapist. She was only about 3 years older than me. But okay. When you think about it, when you're 6 and that kid's 9.
That's a difference, yeah.
That's a huge difference. You know, you're a little human being and that person is like, that person towers over you. You know, like there's like all these things like, well, oh, that couldn't have been a bad thing. Well, I was also forced to spend weekends at her house, you know, when I say forced, I tried to go, no, I don't want to go. And they said, you're going to go. You don't be so snobbish. You know, don't be so, you know, so... Even when I tried to have a little voice and say I didn't want to go to their house, I ended up weekends at their house and spending the whole time, like, petrified, you know.
Wow.
Because that's how I started finding out how screwed up the parents were, too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, women, not my thing.
So,
you know?
When you told your parents and it seemed like your mom didn't say anything and your dad was almost angry,
yeah.
Do you feel like maybe that was some guilt, because you said, like,
yeah,
there was some, it was either the parents' fault because there was no devil, right? There was so,
yeah,
the sin. Do you think that they felt guilt?
Probably. I like that's the way my therapist has helped me view it,
yeah,
you know. And even view being like you said, Roman, you know, like this is what they know and believe, you know. So you know, they don't see anything in it differently. So I've had to, you know, like, back to that acceptance thing, I've had to accept where they are and where they were as parents, as they were doing what they knew,
mm-hmm.
and the best of what they knew, you know. And you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I don't cry about much, but, you know, like, I'm starting to, like...
Maybe 5 times in the 4 years that we've been together.
Yeah.
I've seen her cry.
Yeah.
Because I've clamped down on all my emotions. Crying. But...
Yeah.
They did the best they could, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I always say, I guess. You know, afterwards. Like, I haven't been able to release all of the responsibility that they had. You know,
oh, yeah.
Because I believe that they had some responsibility, not in the fact that she molested me, you know, like but in the fact that they kept pushing me towards unhealthy things and unhealthy families.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely.
Because once you were baptized into that religion, you were family. You know, and so, and that family was always at our house, like all those different, you know, and all these, like, my parents were like the patron saints of the misfits, you know, like as far as like it was like if you were a loser or you know, like a lesser than person, you know, they were the ones bringing them into their house, right? Mm-hmm. To try and fix them, you know, to keep them in the fold, right? Wow. But there were a lot of unhealthy people in our house, a lot of unhealthy people. And I asked my dad after this, I said, you put us with, you know, with dangerous people. And he said, well, that's why we made sure that you knew about, you know, what they had done so that you could be safe.
What?
You know, and I'm like a 6 and 7 year old riding on the shoulders of a guy that was accused of being a pedophile. And I'm riding on the shoulders, and it's okay because my dad told me that he was that way. So
what?
Anything that might have happened, he would have washed his hands of, type of thing, you know. You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
insanity.
Yeah.
It's like, that guy's got a gun. Well, I warned you he had a gun. Yeah. So it's not my fault.
Daddy shot me. I told you he had a gun. Yeah.
So, you know, like, I did just spend a lot of time of my life being, you know, in fear and petrified. And so, and I think because my dad grew up outside the religion, maybe he went, you know, like full bore into it.
Yeah.
But I also think that he knew better. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there's like that level of, I think they do have some responsibility on how much they kind of screwed us up.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, so I've always said they did the best they could, I guess.
What? So, do you pray?
Do I pray? No, okay. I don't. I besides, well, what I don't consider a prayer. Like, okay. I'll just say things like use Curtis for an example. When he goes to, like, a job interview or goes, you know, to take an exam for the state, you know, yeah. Or whatever, I'm like, please be with Curtis. You know, help him stay calm.
Okay.
You know, and that to me is as close to a prayer as I can get.
That's okay. It.
But I don't pray for me so much.
But
as
for
I
me
for
sitting over
people.
Here, when you said that, I'm like, yeah, you're praying.
Yeah, that's
yeah. Well, right? and that's yeah. Like when I go, wow, the clouds are beautiful. Someone said to me,
that's a prayer,
and yeah. I'm like, no, it's not. You know, so. It's still muddy what to me is a prayer.
Yeah.
And but I'm releasing it to whatever.
Okay.
Right now, because I, you know, in all honesty, I think that brainwashing has worked, that there's only one God, and that's the one I learned about. You know, so I'm releasing to whatever and whoever and
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Because like if I get too finite with what my higher power is, then it always seems to pop back into that God that I was taught about.
I like the idea that it's the angels, but not like the common idea of what an angel is, because it sounds like they're more along the lines of people with angelic behaviors in a sense. So it's like to think... like, go be with Curtis so he's not calm. So Curtis is walking into this building to take a test, and there's, like, 40 people like, fuck yeah, Curtis!
Next time I take a test, I'm going to feel like somebody's, like, watching me.
No, there's, like, 25
anxiety.
People.
He's always watching.
Yeah, they're always watching.
Believe me.
I
felt like I couldn't hide because he was always watching. Like, there was nowhere I could be to be in... you know, a private place.
But
wow.
Like for me, if someone's telling me like Jesus is always watching you, I'm like, yeah, and he knows what's up, so I'm good.
Yeah.
It's like they haven't killed me yet, so.
This episode has been brought to you by Transformations Care Residential Detox. Visit us online at transformationscare.com.
It's interesting to listen to people who are able to stay sober with such different ideals
of a higher power. I mean, what's your higher power?
I choose to not tell you because it doesn't matter in this conversation.
Well,
my belief for me is there has to be a higher power for me to give things to and release the bullshit, because my thinking gets me in trouble. And if I'm the higher, if I don't believe there's a higher power, it makes me the higher power. And this thing up here between mayors fucks me up every time. So there's got to be something.
Well,
that's for me. But as far as what it's called or how you frame it in your mind, I make no judgment on anybody else.
The point that
my sponsees, I just tell them, look, dude, you have to have some kind of a higher power because you ain't fucking it. It can be the ocean, it can be the sky, it can be the doorknob, it can be the group. It doesn't matter. But you need to try to get out of yourself. So what makes me, and these are just people that don't really have a big problem with religion, right?
Yeah.
So it's I'm curious how someone that was indoctrinated with all this other super strict, God is watching, there is no devil, if something bad happens, it's your fault. Like, how you get through that.
And still stays hope.
Yeah.
Not without a lot of extra help, honestly. And I think that's where you know, it needs to, that sponsors and stuff like that need to realize, you know, like, there's some people that need outside help,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I needed therapy, and I still need therapy. And I needed to get out of my depression, and it was a clinical one, you know, so I needed to get out of that depression and out away from my divorce before I could even begin to even look at the steps.
Yeah.
And so, like, I call it AA rhetoric, like, you know, like, when there's sometimes people think that there's only one way, you know, that you're going to stay sober, and it's through the steps, and the quicker you do the steps, the better, you know. If I had to have, you know, follow that rhetoric, I want to stay sober, you know, because I would have felt like I was failing on every level, you know, I can't even be in AA, where, you know, and, you know, like, I want to stay sober. I probably wouldn't be here. I'd probably be dead, you know. I probably would have just drank myself to death, you know. So it took therapy, and it still takes therapy. And, you know, it took letting a few people into my life a little bit more, you know, and being able to open up to them before I could ever trust actually a sponsor, you know. So, yeah, I don't know. Do you have other questions?
That was awesome. Thank you for meeting with us.
You're welcome.
I'm so glad we did this.
You have been listening to the Transformations Recovery Podcast with host Roman Cooper. This episode has been brought to you by Transformations Care Residential Detox. Look us up at transformationscare.com or call us at 424-340-9267. Transformations Recovery Podcast was produced and edited by Sammy Town and Annalisa Cheshire. We would like to thank our guests and everyone who has helped us out along the way.
After I smoke all this meth.
That's a good plan.
Yeah, right?
I just wanted to clean her litter box. So.
I just take that out of context completely right now.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you kids call box. It these days?
That's what kids are calling it. Never mind the
Her name is Kat. So.
Yeah, I'm making a t-shirt.
I just wanted to clean her litter box.
Oh,
that's
man.
Fantastic.
Anyway, where were we?